Chris Sharp is the co-creator, executive producer, and CEO of Yoga with Adrian, the largest yoga channel on YouTube with just under 10 million subscribers and just over 850 million video views. Chris began his career on YouTube with Hyla Cooking, one of the first cooking channels on the platform, which he started with his wife, Hyla Johnson, way back in 2010 and ran until 2017. Chris is also a talented writer, director, filmmaker, graphic, and web designer. But enough about that. Let's see if he lives up to all of this hype. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the podcast, Mr. Chris Sharp.
Thanks for having me. That's a lot of hype.
And you have to match up to your wife's hype, you know, because she was on here just a few weeks ago.
I know. It's like, it's always like, I like having her be like the front person, because it's like, what am I going to do to like match up with that? Like, I can't beat the jokes, you know, I can't beat the charm. So I just like come in as like the behind the scenes YouTube husband guy.
She's the litmus test.
That's sort of where I wanted to start in, is to explain to people exactly what it is that an executive producer of a YouTube show does, because I don't think you would consider yourself a YouTuber, but you certainly work with some of the biggest ones.
Yeah, well, so like my background is kind of on the independent film side of things, that I was never, I've always liked making shows, making movies, putting, you know, like bringing a team of people together to like put on a show, for lack of a better term. So when we pivoted to YouTube, it just seemed like connecting the dots of like Hyla cooking, comedy, like this framework, I could see like a show developing there. So once I got her interested in the idea, we started like building out what the show was. And then, like, to use Hyla Cooking as an example, like I would do all like the shooting and the editing, uploading, optimizing, kind of like the business development strategy, all the stuff behind the scenes, so that I can just really give her a platform to like cook and be funny and like engage with an audience. Then I handle like all the behind the scenes stuff. And so when that worked, and Adrian was another actor who was cast in the movie we were all working on that fell apart, that there may be a documentary out about soon, which will be really interesting. So Adrian, you know, like I looked around, what, you know, she was a yoga teacher, but not really like enough to pay her bills. And she was acting in commercials and we liked working together. So I was like, what if we do a yoga channel and we can work? And so we started, you know, once she was into the idea, it took a little bit of convincing, just because doing yoga poses on YouTube, like especially like back then, I don't know, it was like a lot of stuff to navigate. But once we got there, you know, we conceived the show together and like really worked on that, like how she was going to present, how she was going to teach, and what the show was going to look like, intentionally like keeping the production values much more minimal than we would like normally do to like boost that connection between her and the audience. And then for the first few years, it was like circling back to your question of what is a YouTube producer. Yeah, I was shooting, editing, uploading, working on like the search engine optimization so that we could start getting like doing research and analysis to see how we could, because we didn't have money to advertise, we didn't have money to market. So just seeing like organic ways to get traffic into that platform. And since then, like that has become very huge. So I'm not sure like any of our job descriptions are correct right now, because we're just running as fast as we can to keep up with the growth. But yeah, the behind the scenes stuff. And like, I would say it's like looking at the project as a show and trying to like make the best show that's like living up to like the goals of the bigger project. So I just make sure that happens.
So you and Adrian, do you approach it as a partnership, or you both bring, you know, basically sit down at a table, either virtually or other, and discuss everything that's going to happen and the direction the channel is going to take and all of that?
So yeah, that describes it perfectly for the first like 5 years or so. But as stuff has grown so much, our roles have like changed a little bit, and now we're actually like coming back to that. I've been off working on the business side for the most part, and she's been handling the creative side, still within the format. And we'll like talk about, here's some stuff that we should cover, here's like what we want to do like strategically. But you know, because we haven't even been in the same state for the last 5 years, now we're like back together. So like a lot of things are coming full circle, because in addition to the YouTube channel, we also have an app, like a kind of like a Netflix of yoga app that is doing quite well, and we've recently like spun that off into its own company. So now like that's running, and it's just like Adrian and I are back full circle to the YouTube channel where it's like the two of us and no employees. So it's interesting.
Let's rewind even further and go back to when did you first come across YouTube as a website?
So I think it was the first movie that I did, like a very like low budget horror movie. I was trying to like figure out how to, it was like incredibly hard to embed trail. Like send the trailer out for people to see. And I was like making QuickTime videos, and like there was like Real Player back then, all this weird stuff. And then that was like right when YouTube was new. This would have been like 2006. So then I was like, oh, what's this YouTube? And maybe I can use that for the trailer, but the quality was so shitty, I didn't want to use it. And then I think I ended up using Vimeo or something. But yeah, it was early, and I was really like at that time turned off by the low quality of it, because coming from the film world, I was like, this seems, everything looks really like low res and poor quality. So I didn't really see like the potential of it at the time. It took a few years, but
it must have been quite a bit of tooth gritting, because you're coming from film and equipment and lights and da da da. And as you say, you're now in a place where like you'd be able to safely pull all that stuff over and make wonderful, but that's not what worked, and that's not what resonated with YouTubers, at least early on in the day. I know YouTube looks a lot like TV now, but how tough was it to intentionally lower the quality?
Well, I think like since we did Hilo Cooking first, we really had like no, we had not very good equipment. It was just like a camcorder that would be, I would consider like an iPhone, a modern iPhone would be better than the quality that we had. So it was really like dealing with those limitations and just like wanting it to be much better, but then realizing if we don't put it out there, nothing's gonna happen. So like my goal with the Hilo Cooking was like, well, at least like I can improve like 1% each video on something, whether it's like the editing or the lighting. I'm just gonna look for like a 1% improvement each time. And since I'm doing this every week, eventually it's going to add up.
That's a great approach. What was the name of that horror movie?
Sex Machine.
So Hila came on the show and she kind of like touched on it briefly. So now we have to ask, can we talk about the horror movie?
Well, yeah, there's two. Like Sex Machine actually like came out, and Sex Machine was the story of like, it's kind of like a modern day Frankenstein, you know, like amnesia movie where this guy's like trying to he's put together by with all these different body parts, and one of them has like all these tattoos and says sex machine, and that's like one of the clues he's following to like figure out who he used to be. And then so that one like got an international distribution deal back when DVDs were big and there was like a lot of money to be made there. And then we used that to put together financing for the second movie, which was called The Spider Babies, which is a post-apocalyptic action comedy about this three-girl punk rock band that are touring across Texas, you know, at the point where the movie kicks off, and they party super hard, are hungover the next day, sleep really late, and don't realize that the rapture has happened. So then they're like in the middle of Texas and everybody's gone, but these like demons are like coming in and like reanimated corpses, and they figure if they can get to California, not that many people got raptured in California, and they'll be safe.
I wonder why.
So that's the one that we hopefully there's going to be a documentary coming out about that one.
Oh my god, are those films available on streaming at all?
Well, Spider Babies was never complete, and that's like really like the story of it, but we have we're kind of like reconstructing. We've reconstructed a bunch of it because like so much, like, you know, Hilo Cooking came out of that. Yoga with Adrian came out of that.
That's amazing.
One of my like creative partners on that has gone on to like create this animation studio that does like the series Undone. They're doing like the new Richard. Well, I don't know if I can say all the stuff that they're doing, but it's like a huge animation studio. So there's like, you know, a lot of amazing stuff came out of that failure, and I think it would be cool to go back and see just how, I mean, the costume designs, the production design was like was incredible. It was just like we hit a wall that we couldn't complete the movie.
Was doing a documentary your idea? It's a leading question. I'm wondering, is this your way of getting closure for that? Does that allow you to complete the movie without actually completing the movie?
I think so. I mean, I'm not the one making the documentary because I can't even, like, it's so traumatic for me to even look at the footage, but I am hoping that it will be some, it's not, and not because the footage is bad, it's like really cool, but it's still just the fact that I couldn't pull that one off and finish it. So yeah, like it would be closure to like, I think it would be closure on some level. I mean, I want to see it. I don't want to make it, but I'm giving people permission to go do it, and I'll be on it being interviewed and stuff. But
and you know, Sex Machine was a character in Dusk to Dawn.
Yeah.
Tom Savini.
Yep. That wasn't supposed to be the act of the final title of that movie, but that was like an obviously I was hugely inspired by Robert Rodriguez, and that movie wasn't even intended to come out. Because it was like a group of friends of mine and I, we were making these short films. Like, let's just do one and get all of our influences like out in one movie, like kind of our unofficial film school thesis project. And then things take on a life of their own, and then it ended up out there. But
let's talk about the earlier days, the golden age of YouTube, as it is called.
Yeah.
When you're working with your wife, what were the best parts about working with your wife?
I think like in the before we had, you know, like it, everything changes once you have a kid, but like before we like, and we started it before we were married even. So like for us, it was like, we knew we had that time to like hang out and like, even though it's like small, like do something creative, you know, like we're still like getting together and like making a show and like thinking about how can we make this funnier? How can we like make the shots better? So just like, I think just like the hanging out in this kind of like structured way, and then having something we made together as something to put out into the world is like really satisfying.
So what's the worst part about working with your wife?
I think the worst part was like realizing that I realized that she was burned out and done with it, but was feeling like she couldn't quit it. Right, because you've created this thing and you're the face of the thing, and it's different if it's like, if it's different if you've just made some food blog that you can, that's not personality based, you can bring someone in to like keep doing recipes and kind of keep it going. But like if you're the face and you want to quit, the thing is over for all intents and purposes. So I think like during that time, like we probably spent 2 years, like as it got harder to do, as our family grew and our like just things got more complicated. I think working through that process of knowing, and which you guys covered on her episode, but like knowing when to quit, I think that was like the difficult part, because like I was all in favor of quitting if she wanted to quit, but it was a lot of conversation and a lot of how do we like let go of this thing that we made together? Because with YouTube, there's never really an end. You know, it's like,
and there's no precedent. There's right. No one that did it before and is like, oh, that person did it for 10 years and then they retired. We had Michael Buckley on the podcast, and he retired a few years, like a formal retirement, at a time that no one thought about what an exit strategy for a YouTube channel was, or what an exit strategy for doing this is.
Right. So that was like the only tough phase. Other than that, it was fun.
You're pretty much a numbers guy. I get the impression that you, at least from talking to Hyla, especially she tells about how you are real instrumental behind the scenes and keeping track of the channel and seeing how it's going and how it's progressing. Do you still ever look in on the numbers on Hyla Cooking? Because the channel still exists. It's still there.
Yeah.
And then how much time do you spend as part of your job as executive producer on closely monitoring analytics with Yoga with Adrian?
I mean, I'm in there every day, basically, but I'm not doing heavy duty like research anymore. I'm just like making sure that like the particular things that I'm concerned about, there's no red flags on that stuff. Like, are we still like getting the traction that for each video that we need to in the first 24 hours, which is really important. And then I'm all like, probably more so than a numbers guy, I'm more of like I like to experiment to see, because it's always changing, right? And I think that's we talked a little bit about YouTube gurus, and I think like I almost feel like once you have a system that you can teach, what you're teaching is out of date. So because it's going to take you like, okay, well, dude, I've got this figured out. Then you're going to like, even if it just takes you whatever, like a couple of months to put together a course on here's how to do YouTube. Well, it's too late because you got to be in there. So like I'm very much into like the laboratory of, okay, what happens if maybe tags don't really work anymore? I'm going to put a video without tags, or I'm going to put a video with three tags and see what happens. So like I experiment a lot, and like having a channel like Yoga with Adrian, it's kind of a luxury because we know that we've got enough subscribers that we know each video is going to do all right, even if I mess it up. So like I'm not afraid to like go in there and mess stuff up to see what's working. And so lately I've been doing a lot of tagging experimentation, which has been interesting.
You must have a really high retention rate on those because they're follow along videos for the most part. So somebody is going to watch that and do the yoga along with Adrian. So I would imagine you get people watching the entire length of that video, and they're not watching it at double speed, which people do on so many videos these days.
Yeah, it's great. Our watch time is fantastic. So what we have to be careful about is we want to promote it in a way that we're hitting people that are going to like do the yoga practice and not that are just going to like bump in and see like what is Adrian talking about something, or is there like some entertainment thing here? So we don't want that. So a lot of times like we can see from the Instagram, you know, Instagram will pop in and like watch the intro and then they're out. They're not going to like, if we promote on Instagram, they're not going to like watch the whole thing because it's like, we're really designed for search first and foremost. So like if someone's like looking for yoga for wrist pain, for an example, like we want to be there. We look at search as people having a problem, and we want to be the first ones in that conversation. Like say if they're having a problem with their back or whatever their question is, there's usually an underlying problem or issue or something they're trying to solve. We want to be first in those conversations. So that's why like the search results are still like very important to me, even though I don't know, you don't really hear that much, like if that's kind of fallen out of favor, I think, like the search engine positioning for YouTube, search engine optimization for YouTube.
Keyword specific, I mean, we in the cleaning space have that where it's like clean your whatever, yeah. Instant Pot, da da da. They don't do well. The subscribers aren't really overly crazy about them until they need to clean their Instant Pot. But it's content which is put out there for a specific keyword, knowing that you're not going to get, you know, the same amount of engagement or whatnot. So do you have a content mix for the yoga channel, as in here's stuff for new subscribers, here's stuff for the existing subscribers, here's some entertaining stuff, here's some serious stuff, here's some...
Yeah. For the YouTube channel, like we used to like do vlog content and like we used to do different type of content there, but now for on YouTube, it's specifically follow along yoga practices and it's all the same set. It's all the same format and everything, but we do break those down to... We know that people are coming in looking for certain things. Like one of the controversial things is that we have a series of videos called Yoga for Weight Loss, and that's like a hot button thing. But we had a lot of conversations about it. I'm like, look, if we can rank for Yoga for Weight Loss, we can like open the floodgates of people because that's what people are searching for. They're not really searching for like these ethereal type of yoga things, you know, when you see the volume for like Yoga for Weight Loss as opposed to like Yoga Flows and stuff like that, it's like there's no comparison. So once we like did the videos on Yoga for Weight Loss, and we're very careful in like how we discuss like the topic of weight loss in the video. So if you watch, there's still a lot of people that just get offended by the name, but that's like when we ranked for Yoga for Weight Loss, it was all these new people coming in, and it was the type of people that we wanted because we've always wanted to go after people that weren't necessarily going to go to an actual yoga class, or people that were kind of being, we felt like were being underserved by the yoga industry. So like once we got those people in, those were the those were like just hundreds of thousands a month of fresh people that were being introduced to our thing, and then we can lead them in different ways. So that would be like a an entry level, what we would consider an entry level video, and then we that are designed to pick up the search traffic and then introduce people to Adrian and introduce people to what we're doing. And if they like it, ideally they subscribe or watch a few more, but it's not gonna be for everybody. And then we have our kind of like ones that we know that there's a lot of requests from our existing community. And so then we have a segment devoted to those. And then we have like a segment kind of devoted to more advanced stuff. So we do have like tiers and, you know, tiers of how that content is structured on YouTube, but we've moved all of the like vlog stuff, travel stuff, all the other types of content are exclusively on our membership now.
All right, let's talk about seasonality, or mm-hmm. a tent pole, I think is what YouTube calls them. January 1st, for you and for us, is mm-hmm. like the Super Bowl. Yep. That's when all of the New Year's resolutions come home to roost and everybody goes on YouTube to learn how to clean and do yoga mm-hmm. and everything else. So my question is, how do you, A, prepare for that time? And now that you've done this for quite a few years, what are some of the trends or kind of like anomalies that you see happen throughout the course of January as people start off and then as the month kind of progresses?
That's great. So we start preparing for January in September of the previous year. Because like January is, it's like a huge time of year for multiple things, but that's like, in 2014, we did our first like product, which was like a January yoga thing that you could follow, and it was a paid product, and it was like a bundle of videos, and then we went through it with like this in this Facebook group, everyone that signed up. First of all, we couldn't believe people bought it. Secondly, we were like, could not believe how quick it was growing the community, and third, we couldn't believe what a great experience it was. So we decided on the next year to do it for free. And we released like 30 videos in January, a video every day, and called it 30 Days of Yoga. And that's like, that's the tipping point for the channel because it grew so fast. So, and it became, it's a great experience that people like had a great time doing and looked back on and loved it. So we've done it, I guess, like 7 years now, and this year was by far our biggest yet. It gets bigger each year, whereas like, so now January is, we publish a video every day in January, but the rest of the year we really only do one per month now. So it's like January is the time when we're going in. That's our like album drop of the year, that's our like big project, and then the rest of the year is kind of, because we've got, you know, like 700 videos on YouTube. And so it becomes tricky. So we can talk about that and how we resurface that content and like keep that content alive. But January, yeah, people come on strong, start to fade after the first week in our industry anyway. So if we can reach out to those people and get them back involved in the series, then it seems like they come back stronger and even finish. But there is like a decline over the course of February, but I think that people, like, we have a lot of people restarting the series in like mid-January. Like maybe they started, fell off, and have thought about it, and they're like, okay, I'm gonna do it now, and then they'll start. So we have an evergreen email sequence that they can sign up and start at any time, and it sends them a daily email that ties to that video. So by doing that, it keeps those videos alive throughout the year. But there's definitely a drop. There's definitely like huge interest and activity for us. It really is like after Thanksgiving up to January 1st, people will kind of like realize they're derailing everything. And then they're looking to this January 1st thing as like something at the end of the tunnel that they're going to like change their life. Yeah.
And when you talk about resurfacing videos, are you talking about specific videos, like remaking those or just revisiting them, or?
Well, so we have some, you know, I feel like everyone has great videos in their library that just because they've fallen out of the algorithm. It's not new, it's not fresh. They've kind of fallen out of the algorithm. So what we do is, like, every month we put together a themed calendar that we send out to our email list, or people can just, like, download it from the website. And it's just, like, just gives people a video to do every day.
Oh.
And so we'll pull, so we'll go back through our library, and there's certain ones that we really want to bring to the top. There's other ones that are, like, a little more dated than we would like. So we just call it resurfacing, because a lot of our people now weren't around when we did those videos, and we want to, like, pop them up and, like, send some traffic to them. And we have a lot of, we have probably like 500,000 people that download these calendars every month. So wow. It does, like, provide some traffic to those older ones.
Having an email list is king, isn't it? If you've got an email list, it's amazing the power of that.
And people hate to hear that. Have you noticed that? Do you ever talk to anybody about that? Like, I feel like I have annoyed so many people by talking about why they need to have an email list.
Oh, no. Well, you know, at first, years ago, I started an email list just as a fun thing. Hey, I'm going to keep in contact. A few people signed up. But once I really started having a point to the email list, and it was a real positive thing. And it's a great way to not just stay in touch with people, but alert them to new things that are coming up. And it's interesting to see the open rate on those and to see really what's working and how it reaches people. I think an email list is the most effective marketing tool there is. And it's funny because so many people think, and who uses email? Email is not a big thing anymore, but it is.
It's huge. I mean, like, we've got we've got big social followings across the different things. We've got a lot of engagement there, but I would say like 80% of all revenue is, like, directly due to the email list for our business.
We took that same approach. We didn't think about it until we met Antonio at ClamorCon, actually, a few years ago. He's like a dude who's just like, he has 100 different email lists. And then I also remember seeing a video from CPG Gray, because he was having problems with his YouTube channel, and he's like 2.5-3 million subscribers, and he made a video about the importance of an email list, because while he was going through this and his channel was, you know, suspended or whatever it was, he could turn to his email list to be able to reach out and connect. And he put the video out there saying, like, to anybody who's a creator, an email list is the most important thing, because that is a direct connection to the people that are watching. Because if YouTube takes your channel away, you don't remember those 10 million subscribers. You certainly don't have all of their email addresses. And especially when you're asking for someone to do more than just go and watch a video, that's when an email list comes out. Because if it is like, hey, go buy a thing or go do a thing, you want that to be on an email list, not trying to get that 3% click-through rate from a YouTube video or something like that.
And plus, having no idea who's clicking, who's not clicking, having no idea how, like, with email, you know, like, how your messaging is working, and you know who your engaged people are, which is, like, so fantastic. Just not having access to any of that on YouTube, I mean, I get why you don't have access to it, but if you're going to, like, really build a business, and I guess that's what I'm more, like, YouTube is, like, I'm not in this to, like, I mean, I love YouTube, and, like, if it would have been around when I was a kid, and there would have been a place for me to, like, put all these, like, weird movies I was making and for people to see, like, it would be a different story, but, like, coming at it now, it's a piece of the business, but it's not like we don't factor YouTube revenue into any of our financial projections, because I just, like, it's like too dependent on,
right?
Like we got hacked this year and didn't have any, like, revenue for, like, several months on YouTube, but because which was still like super stressful and annoying, like, don't get me wrong, but the fact that we had all these other, like, elements going, and we didn't have to, you know, we didn't have to worry about making payroll or any of that kind of stuff. We had, you know, that was a huge relief while we got that, like, situation sorted out. So that's kind of, like, we look at the YouTube revenue as our, like, margin for error money. So, like, when we're doing a tour or something, it's really hard to, not that we've done a tour in a while, but we've done tours before, and it's, like, incredibly hard to make money on live events in yoga, because even though we could sell, like, three or four times the amount of tickets, because it's a yoga thing, we need mats and we need space. So even if it's at a huge event, we've sold, like, 3,500 tickets in London, that's as many people as we can get in there. So it becomes, like, it would seem like that would be a good revenue generator, but it's actually not. because there's a lot of expenses that go in it, into it. So like the YouTube channel has always allowed us to do things that we wanted to do that like build the brand, but it was like gave us a margin for error for when those things didn't actually make money.
You talk about these like YouTube gurus, like we were talking about before, and there seems to be a rash of them out anymore. About everybody seems to be an expert on YouTube, and they all do the same thing, is focusing in on only that one component, YouTube. Mm-hmm. When if you really want to run a successful business on anything, you have to treat it as one component of the business. It can't be the entire thing. And so these YouTube experts are all focused on, again, those clickbait titles, how to increase, mm-hmm. how to go from 0 to 100,000 subscribers in 3 months or something. It seems to be mostly focused on subscribers, I guess, because of the ego number there. But wow.
Yeah, and I think maybe a subscriber number works well for people that are like looking for kind of like influencer type strategies, like getting brand deals and that type of stuff. Like if you have numbers, that's kind of attractive. But yeah, like YouTube is such a vast thing. You know, it's so much, I think it's bigger than even we realize as people that are like very involved in it, like how many different things are going on in YouTube, and like how many, like people are using it for so many different reasons, and like not just creators, but like, I'm amazed that people I know that like just use, like I know several people that just use YouTube to like watch financial channels, to watch people like about stocks and different things like that. Like, well, that's like nothing I would ever see, because all of my stuff is like, here's the new camera you should buy, or here's like new editing stuff or whatever, you know? So it's like, it's serving up a different experience, like absolutely everybody that's on there. So it's like hard for any one person to really know what YouTube is. So yeah. So I think a lot of these, YouTube gurus are kind of in the space of an influencer adjacent space, where they're teaching you how to like do the clickbait things, how to like just really like grind out a ton of content and kind of become famous, which is like totally possible, and then you can do brand deals. But that's just not, that to us was always like short term. We've had to like be very aggressive about making sure Adrian doesn't slide into the influencer world, because like she is like a legit yoga teacher and a legit, you know, super legit trained actress and all this kind of stuff. And we have this foundation that of, you know, like some of the best yoga training that's out there. So we have to like kind of defend against all the influencer marketing at all times, because we want her to be seen as like a teacher and like a personality and not someone that's like for sale.
It's interesting because the vast majority of the YouTube gurus who seem to have advice have success built upon that message, where that's what their outlet was. I have yet to see someone who has a YouTube program or something who has existing success. I built this channel up. It was a channel about whatever, repairing cars or something like that. And I built it to 1 million subscribers. Let me show you how. And like, that's my story. The backstory always seems to be like, I've been doing YouTube for a while and this is what I do. And when I see the content, it's like you talk about doing YouTube exactly. In your YouTube content, as opposed to, you know, here's my cleaning channel, or here's my yoga channel, and now I'm talking about this. And I bring this up because you actually wrote a book quite a while ago, and I know that you've had, you know, kind of some involvement in these programs, but you said it earlier, where as soon as you were to say something, it's kind of out of date. And YouTube had that playbook for the longest time, and they're like, say a call to action within the first 30 seconds of the video, tell people to subscribe and tell people to like the video. And then like 2 years ago, that became really cliche and everybody hated doing that. And then that started shortening view time and lowering audience retention, because no one wants to hear a call to action before the actual content of the video and whatnot. So at the same time, there's no way to actually be like, this is the way to do it, because by the time you're doing that, you need to do something different to separate yourself, quite like thumbnail design or anything like that. And actually, while I say that, are you how much is your interest in thumbnail design?
I realize that we need to improve our thumbnails, right? so not very much. And I'm that's one of the, you know, as we've built and have a team now, that's one of the things that I'm trying to not do anymore, thumbnail design. But it's like, It's crazy because some of the thumbnails that some of the ones that I think are the worst have a great click-through rate, and I don't.
It's impossible to figure it out. It's just so hard to just figure out what resonates on any specific video.
And I don't think that our so, I like okay thumbnails are important. Don't get me wrong, but I think that they're a little bit less important for our particular channel because. Like when we have a video drop, we immediately email 1.2 million people. So that, you know, and those emails, like, you know, they tend to go out, they don't go out like this, they stagger out over about 12 hours. And so then, so that's like people getting emails about the new video every, you know, like, and just clicking throughout the course of the first like 48 hours of a video launch. So we're a little bit less dependent on our thumbnails having to hit because we're also not in that space where we're not like in the Mr. Beast space, right? Where it's like, where we're really depending on people like clicking on us to see what's in there. Like actually we would rather have people not click on it because it looks cool. We want people to click that are going to watch and actually do the practice. So we want our thumbnails to like kind of set that example. And that's why we've always been very careful in the early days, like we don't have any suggestiveness in our thumbnails at all. Like as far as like, if you were to look at
the yoga space channels, is rife with that.
Yeah. It's like lots of like cleavage and butts and sometimes even more, but if you go look and those videos will perform really well. But if you go in and look at the comments, it's like fap, 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 I fapped or whatever. And I'm like, haven't you guys heard of actual porn sites? Why are you watching this?
Wrong type of yoga.
So like for us, I mean, like thumbnails are definitely important, and I get it for people that want to have these kind of like more viral click-through hits. They are super important, but for what we're doing, it's important. But I'm cool with them not attracting drive-by clicks because I don't want like people bouncing off after 2 minutes.
Do you have a specific publishing sequence that you do, as in when you release a video, do you kind of go through a checklist of and then it goes to Twitter, then it goes to Instagram, and we do an Instagram story and da da da? And how much of that do you prepare beforehand so it's all turnkey? And third question, three in one, do you actually push the button yourself? Because 10 years on, I still love pushing the publish button to publish the video.
Yeah, so I push the schedule button. But yeah, you're right. We do have a whole sequence now, and we're experimenting with different, like right now we're using a platform called monday.com that where we can like templatize, because we were all doing so much stuff and our team was getting really overwhelmed. And I'm like, I feel like we don't have visibility into all the work that's being done. So like everything that we're doing right now can, or 90% of everything that we're doing now can be broken down into a system. So we've been like, turning into a system. So now that's like, we've got a Monday board that generates fresh and empty for each new video. And it's got like everything that goes into that video from pre-production, post-production, optimization, launch, and then promotion. So we're able to like disperse that out across the team. And circling back to the thumbnail thing, a lot of times like the thumbnail, like we need to have a consistent art that is consistent, like social art and email art. So we need it to be like, we need to have like something that works in the email, something that works on the thumbnail, something that works across social that's not all exactly the same, but like ties together. So people are like getting those multiple impressions. So we do have it systematized. We have different people doing things at different times, but I do like most of the time click the publish or schedule button.
Technically, good.
Yeah.
And are you using any of the other YouTube features, stories, the community tab, shorts? That's a new one.
We use the community tab a lot, particularly during the 30 days of yoga, and we're just using that more and more. So, like during our 30 days series, and particularly this year, I feel like we've done a really good job of actually like turning our community discussion, our like comments and everything, into a positive like feel good place. And now we're able to like kind of use the community forum community feature to do that as well. We haven't played with stories or shorts.
Do you think that there's any like single best practice a YouTuber should have to actually get some traction on their videos. And you can't say just produce good content.
Yeah, none of this like, oh, just make good videos.
No. Well, I mean, I can only like speak from my background, right? And so this is not like the cool stuff anymore, but I started doing YouTube because I made myself go learn how to do search engine optimization and like ranking in Google and stuff. So I would say like the thing that has really made the difference for us is to like do the research to find out what people are actually looking for, and then you can make really like whatever video you want if you've packaged it to if you've packaged it in a way that's going to deliver value to those people with that problem, right? So this is very in the how-to thing. It's not going to be like whatever, I don't know how to do videos about like eating 1,000 hot dogs or like giving away a ton of money or crashing a car and stuff like that. But like, right, as far as like in the how-to, I think if you can really like spend the time to see that, like for us, I mean, this was like the biggest growth moment in our business is when we saw that there was like such a high volume of search traffic, search queries for yoga for weight loss. I mean, it was like above and beyond anything else.
You gotta do it.
So like, okay, obviously people are legitimately like typing this in. They have a legitimate interest, need, desire for this. So let's make something, let's use this information that we can get from our research and like actually like try to make a video that's going to talk back and respond to like this search query. So, I mean, that's old school, but it still works.
Well, it's good business advice for any business. You find a problem and you supply the solution.
And I think that's like, we're not making, I mean, we get a lot of like creative fulfillment out of, like Adrian and I, we love to work together. I mean, but like, honestly, like when we first started this, it was just to like quit our day jobs so we can make movies on the weekends. And we were able to quit our day jobs, but the things continued to grow so fast that we found ourselves just working 7 days a week. But it's always like, we're never like making videos in a vacuum, and we're never like doing anything that we do in a vacuum. It's because we, and now it's a little bit more, it's a little bit less data driven and a little bit more like intuition based. Like what are, you know, and like 2020, like our 30 days series was called Home. And then like 2020 was like a year everyone spent at home, which was like crazy.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more intuition based, but it's like, we're always creating with the idea that we have this community, this audience there. Like, how are we going to deliver value to them in a way that's going to like be beneficial to them and or enjoyable? And that's why the vlogs on the membership work so well, because people get to just hear Adrian talking about whatever's on our mind.
And without really being bogged down with the numbers, how do you measure channel growth and just the growth of the overall show?
I mean, subscribers are the thing that we pay attention to. And so what we see is a huge, and you guys may see something similar to this, but we see like a huge spike at the beginning of January, and then it kind of like levels out. But our baseline each year is higher than the one before. So we know there's going to be a huge spike, and then it's going to bounce around a little bit. But where does it level out? Is it like on our watch time, is it like significantly higher than the year before? That's really like all I'm like, the increase in watch time and the increase in subscribers is the ones that I'm, and subscribers, honestly, it's like such a vanity metric, but I can't help it.
It is. I'm always trying to figure out how subscribers plays into the factor, but it is, it's an ego.
I remember I think it was 2018, about halfway, summer of 2018, I saw an Instagram post from you where you guys just passed 5 million subscribers. You're just short of 10 million subscribers now. So in only a couple years, am I correct in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's where it goes faster and faster.
And I remember like from 0 to 100,000, and then I remember a real struggle from 100,000 to 1 million. And then before I knew it, we were closing in on 2 million. It was like, oh, wow, that happened really quickly. How big has COVID been? Like, has the past year really, really impacted that number in kind of like a skewed way? And like, what's the growth kind of pace? Is it hard to kind of keep up with that much kind of growth?
Yeah, I think for me, I've had to it is hard to like could the 2020 due to COVID, like the explosion, like everything like spiked up so high in March that it was like higher than any of our 30 days launches, which are normally like our high parts of the year. Like our video subscription service like went down because we had so many people logging on. So there was a lot of like, it really exposed like any flaws in our system, like any stuff where it wasn't like super bulletproof, it broke, you know. So
it's a good stress test.
Yeah. So like I am excited to hit the 10 million number. I mean, that feels like a really significant milestone, but I think at the stage that we are, I've really like moved towards being more focused on the subscription platform and what the engagement is there and how we can make that into a bigger, better experience. Like we're doing some new things with onboarding. We're adding new features to like, not, I mean, gamify it, I guess. Like, so people can see like, oh, you're practicing with like this many other 1,000 people right now, or like you've done like 30 days of yoga in a row, or different things like that. So I'm much less involved in YouTube than I was than a few years ago, and I'm very like focused on what does it mean to be an independent like OTT app, like in this industry where you have like Peloton, just like the massive fitness app, whether you have a bike or not, and then you have Apple Fitness Plus coming in. So now you have these like really big players coming into like the fitness subscription space. And so it's been interesting. It's an interesting thing to be like, we're the equivalent of like indie filmmakers in this space, right? Because we're not like venture backed and we're a small team and we're like figuring it out. So a lot of my attention has like moved away from YouTube towards that, but I still like, I mean, I love YouTube and I can't wait to hit 10 million.
Do you consider those big companies to be competition? Are you trying in some way to completely differentiate yourself from that? Or do you try to actually, do you expect to compete with that?
We don't, like we're trying to differentiate ourselves by being like the more like homemade weird one. I guess is like the easiest way to describe our.
I built my whole career on that.
So it's like, so we want ours to feel like much more personal, and we legitimately want it to be much more personal, and we'll have, you know, there's gonna be some things in there that you won't find on other yoga or fitness apps, but we will expand a little bit beyond yoga once we can travel again. We've had like this like travel type show that will go on the membership. We're working with some animators to do a kids version that'll come out on Saturday morning. So there's going to be like an animated yoga show that we're like producing and making at least 8 episodes of. So like things like that, I think will differentiate us. And we've got some other cool things planned as well.
I'm so jealous about one of the things I've wanted to do for at least the past 5 years on Clean My Space is do a animated kids version of it with an animated Melissa teaching kids about making your bed and cleaning up your room. Da, 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 da. Oh, I'm jealous. This sounds like something that you wanted to do for a while.
Totally. Yeah. Cause it's also something that, we get requests for all the time. So we intentionally keep Yoga with Adrian a very like clean channel because so many people do it with their kids. And, so like we've had a lot of requests for like kids yoga, and we didn't during the early phase of the pandemic and lockdown stuff, we did like yoga PE for like PE teachers to use in their like classroom curriculums and stuff. And those did really well. So we're always on the lookout for ways that we can like better serve and our existing audience and like the people around them.
Yeah, yoga is perfectly suited for everybody being at home last year. I know that, you know, a lot of the fitness channels did really well, but they all had to switch to body weight exercises for the most part because all of the dumbbells and everything were sold out. Yeah. And so yoga, perfect. You don't need any of that.
Totally.
You managed to shoot in some incredibly exotic places. Has there been a time that you've been just like behind the camera and like had to like step out and just be like, whoa, look at this beautiful place? And all, I mean, you've like you said, you've done it with 3,500 other people and da da da. Some of the pictures and some of the footage and the framing that you've done, like it must be amazing to travel and not only be able to do this, but then to travel these beautiful places and frame it up. It just must like
I miss that part a lot. I miss that part a lot because we have it's not having been able to travel for a while. But yeah, I mean, we've been all over the place. I never imagined that I would have I've traveled more since starting yoga with Adrian than I have in the whole rest of my life combined. So it's like.
Has there ever been a real challenge as far as you trying to get amazing content and it being a beautiful space, but it's just incredibly difficult to film
Yeah,
there?
like when so we did a couple of retreats in Nicaragua, and the footage is amazing, but it was like so aggressively hot where we were both where it's like and we were like up on a roof and Adrian was like slipping because it's like it's like we were both like it was amazing. Literally, we're in the jungle, but that was a hard place to shoot just because because the cameras were overheating, even though we had cameras that don't overheat. It was just so humid and so hot. And that one was a hard one. That one was probably the hardest, but it was worth it. The beach was different. Once we got out of the jungle and went down to the beach, then that was
It was all
much
good.
easier.
Any place you want to go back to shoot?
I'm really excited. We had a great time in London, and London is like one of our biggest areas for outside of the United States. That's our biggest city, and so just the whole vibe when we were there was great. And I'm excited to we have some opportunities opening to shoot in some really historic, beautiful locations there. And then I'd like to go back to Red Rocks in
Oh.
Colorado and shoot something there.
I grew up out there. I was at Red Rocks all the time. I just lived right near there. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, super cool. That was what that's like that's one of my favorite events that we did. So, because it was just like being outside in that venue, the energy was
Oh, yeah. It's
amazing.
amazing. Amazing place.
You talked about being excited about 10 million subscribers in a really cool way. You managed to actually say that and just be like, yeah, it's kind of cool that 10 million subscribers is coming up. My question to you is, have you picked out where you're going to put your diamond play button?
It's probably going to go to Adrian's house.
Nice. Do you have all of the other plaques? Do you
I
have a
have all the
wall
other ones because
in
Hyla and Adrian, they would make fun of me when I would get excited about
the
these play buttons coming in. They're all like, ah, oh, whatever. I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, so maybe I will keep it because they did make fun of me a lot.
Do it. Put it in your office, and then just be like, that's what I did. That's why Melissa didn't care. Melissa, it came, and she's like, that's kind of cool. I'm like, this is going in my
No, I like
office.
actually got made fun of, and I had to have them up in the garage because we used to have a garage office, and I was
Had to keep them out of eyesight so they wouldn't make fun of
it
you.
wasn't like really mean. It was just like I was excited, and I could tell they kind of like felt bad for me because I was excited about something so dumb. So we'll see where the diamond one goes.
I think that's about this was
think that's
our
about it.
brain fart
You
part. We'll cut that part out.
got it. No, that's
Go
great.
ahead and wrap.
All right, I'll wrap it up.
Oh, you're gonna. I thought you were gonna rap.
Well, we'd like to see that too.
Lady on a beat, Chris, go. And now there's all this pressure. How do I even?
This is the most important part of the show. If you can't nail this, I don't know. Do you have any call to actions? Is this a good time for a call to action? Do you have an email newsletter that people can
Okay, here's a
subscribe to get
question.
notified?
Yeah, see, that's a good question. That's what we should ask you before we end this is how do we end these shows? Because every YouTube always says you got to have a call to action. You got to do this thing. You got to do that thing. We don't want to do all those things.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think about this a lot on podcasts. I don't know. I mean, some podcasts that I've been into, they have like a little thing at the end where they like, oh, this is like something really cool we saw on YouTube this week, and they like talk about a channel that other people like might have missed, or like talk about a podcast that other things might have missed. So like, that's been like a podcast formatting thing that I've been intrigued by, where there's like a little an intro, an interview, and then there's like a little thing at the end that would introduce me to something that I wasn't aware of. And then, but I don't know, you should have a newsletter too.
We should do the newsletter, Chad, because you know what we do with this podcast is we just jump into it and then jump out of it. We started for a little while trying to do the little intro and chit chat back and forth, but it
Talk
just
about the weather and
but I think
stuff.
that's fine too, right? Because I'm really into doing stuff without like all of the conventional stuff that you're supposed to do and seeing what happens. So it could be cool to just like you just drop in the middle of the conversation. But I think if you have a place to get a call to action for a newsletter, That'd be worth
it. I think you're right. We got to do the newsletter thing. You know, I mentioned this show in my newsletter, though. You know, I don't know if people jump over and watch the show because of that or not.
Well, we don't have a newsletter, but this is the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.